You're tuned to Spokane Public Radio. It's 4 minutes past 11 o'clock here in the Pacific Time Zone. I'm Jim Tevenin. It's time for the Piano Bench, with support from Northern Quest Resort and Casino, presenting the Pepsi Outdoor Summer Concert Series with Boz Scaggs and Michael McDonald, August 11th, 7:30 p.m. Tickets at northernquest.com. And the Inland Northwest Chapter of the Piano Technicians Guild, an international organization providing certification and continuing education for piano technicians. Today, a very special piano bench, and it is around an instrument that is going to have a performance, a farewell performance, and actually kind of a greeting and farewell performance at the Northwest Museum of Arts and Culture this Sunday afternoon at 6 o'clock. This Sunday afternoon, the 6th of August at 2 o'clock. Let's get our numbers correct. And we'll double check on that time in just a moment. But Sunday afternoon at the MAC is the time and place for this concert on a very special instrument. And to help me talk about that instrument that we'll hear from in the course of this program, my guest in the studio today is Ken Eshte. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning, Jim, and thanks for having me in.
Okay, you were correcting me on the time of the concert this coming Sunday.
It is 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
It is 3 o'clock. Okay. The MAC was not telling the truth on their website.
Oh, my goodness. No, we'll have to check that for sure.
So anyway, this Sunday afternoon at the MAC is the time, and this is a very special instrument. Let me kind of set the stage, and then I'll hand it over to you to get the final details on this. The instrument is a Blüthner grand piano that belonged to one of the legends of Spokane. That's Dr. Hans Moldenauer. Moldenauer came to us from Germany. He was a pianist. He escaped Germany in the late 1930s and emigrated to this country. And somehow he managed to get a grand piano smuggled out of Germany and over to the U.S. right on the doorstep of World War II. And we'll talk about that in a bit when we get to the piano. But Moldenauer himself, if you're not familiar with his name, is really kind of a major figure both in the music history of Spokane and of the world, really. He emigrated here after the Second World War. He founded in his house, which is still standing on South Lincoln Street here in Spokane, he founded the Spokane Conservatory and dedicated his life to teaching and to performance and also to collecting musical materials, scores from as far back as Beethoven, Brahms, and as current as the music of Gustav Mahler, and especially Anton Webern. He was a scholar of the work of Webern and wrote the seminal biography of that composer. When Moldenauer died, his piano was gifted to the state of Washington. We'll talk about that in a second as well. But he is known primarily just as a world figure for this immense collection of music known as the Moldenauer Archives. And they fairly recently were transported to the Library of Congress, where they now reside. So that's a bit about Moldenauer and just this collection of music of his. What about his piano? Tell us a little bit about. We're familiar with Steinway. We're familiar with Baldwin, probably, and a few other household names as far as pianos go. But Blüthner?
Well, Jim, the piano industry in Europe was really centered in Germany and in England. And it is the German industry that caught on to the new American school of piano making, which was being led by Steinway. And the Steinway family was from Germany. Their name was Steinweg. And one of the sons remained behind and continued to sort of promote the ideas that Steinway was coming up with. The three companies that really picked up on the new American method were Bösendorfer, Blüthner, and Bechstein. We think of them as the three B's. And they converted over to using a full cast iron frame and having bass strings cross over, but also the whole method in which the pianos were constructed. the way the factories were built with the steam plant centered in the middle so that all of the exterior windows would allow for more light for the workers. The whole system really evolved very extensively in Germany, and those three companies rose to the top, took over the market, particularly in England, where the Broadwoods and the established names in England that had led the industry up until that time fell behind, and it was the German pianos that really became quite popular.
Let's get a bit of a sound in our ear of what we're talking about here. This piano, was it still at your shop or has it moved to the Mac already?
No, it's still at the workshop.
Okay. And we were able to go over there last week and record two of our best pianists of the region, Dr. Jody Graves and Greg Presley, doing some short selections that were really, I think, uniquely suited to this particular instrument. I want to start with the first selection that Jody Graves played. It's by a French composer of the late 19th and early 20th century. His name is Gabriel Grovelet. He wrote a collection based on poetry called the Almanac of Images. And this is the last in that set. Music of Grovelet, played by Dr. Jody Graves on the Blüthner piano. Thank you. And we've heard Dr. Jody Graves, two selections on the Blüthner piano that my guest in the studio, Ken Eshte, has restored. And let's begin by asking, what is it that is characteristic, is unique about the sound of the Blüthner instrument?
Well, piano tone and expectations of piano tone have really changed from the 19th century through the 20th century until now. And there are characteristics that are built into this piano, the way the soundboard is laid out, the way the bridges are placed, that sort of embed a certain sound coming out of it, regardless of what interpretation that I might put on as the restorer. The instrument really wants to do a particular thing. Mm-hmm. And this instrument is very warm sounding. It's very resonant, particularly in the lower registers. And it has a thinner, more, I'd say, less dominant high treble. So that when we look at pieces that are written by composers during this period, and we see that there is, say, a really big trill in the upper treble with a lot of stuff going on in the left hand, we might find on the modern piano that that trill up at the top is knocking our ears out, and that we're not able to pay attention to what else is going on. But with this piano, it's that really switches the balance, that you can see that in some of the pieces that Jody was playing, we could clearly hear that it was the treble was submissive to what was going on with the rest of the instrument.
Yeah, that especially is true in a piece that we'll play toward the end of the hour, a piece by Edward McDowell, which has this spot with a continuous trill up fairly high. And lots going on, which is actually the main event in her left hand. And you're absolutely right. There's a kind of brittle quality that is part of the contemporary sound of many, many pianos, not to single out any particular brand or era or anything like that. But there is a crisp is, I think, perhaps a good way to describe the overall sound of many, many contemporary pianos.
Yeah, it's a modern expectation mm-hmm. of what we want in a piano that's going to be doing everything. Mm-hmm. And the manufacturers and the people doing concert preparations are fully aware of the fact that we're not going to be switching pianos mm-hmm. from this piece to that piece. Mm-hmm. So we need something that'll do everything. In this particular case, we were able to select pieces that were really good for this piano, and it really shows off its strong points and its warmth and makes it something that draws the pianist in. It was very interesting to see both Greg and Jody basically learn to play the instrument and little by little fall in love with it so that they were drawing more and more out of the instrument. You could really hear that when you were just sitting there. They had a way of interpreting what they were getting back from the instrument.
Now, what is the vintage of this instrument?
It was made in 1893. And Blüthner, over the years, has been one of the companies that really tried some experimental stuff. We have to remember that all through the 19th century and early into the 20th century, big innovations were being made in piano manufacture, in the actions, in the sound. Blüthner, for a period of time, was using and still does for some of their instruments, I think. I'm not sure if they still do this, but there were actually four strings for every single key. Normal would be three. Mm-hmm. And the hammer would strike only three of the strings. The fourth string was suspended slightly above that strike line so that it wasn't actually struck, but it was there on the bridge vibrating in sympathy so that the instrument had quite a different singing sound, one that they were known for. The instrument that we have in the workshop has an unusual damper pedal, where most of the time a damper pedal will shift the keyboard physically from left to right.
For the soft pedal.
Yeah, the soft pedal, right? Mm-hmm. So that the hammer only strikes two of three strings and then therefore is softer. On this pedal, the hammers are physically moved closer to the strings so that they have less energy developing. And also, it moves the keys closer to the backs of the keys are raised so that the fronts of the keys actually drop. So the distance that the key travels is less as well. Mm-hmm. So this gives us a completely different effect. And Jody was commenting that she was discovering all kinds of things she could do with that pedal.
Well, it requires really an adjustment, too, for the player, since the travel of the key is less. That can, the first time you try it, that can be a genuine shock. But, it does have this is not your Rachmaninoff instrument. But certainly not anything with orchestra. But there is just this big repertory of music that for which it is just wholly and completely appropriate. Let's explore this a little bit with the playing of Greg Presley. And we're going to hear from him a nocturne by Edvard Grieg to get things going. Again, on the Blüthner piano, this is Greg Presley.
Thank you.
and some lovely music, Nocturne in C by Edvard Grieg, played by Greg Presley on the Blüthner piano, being restored by my guest in the studio, Ken Eshte. And Ken, we need to inform everybody, first of all, apologies for that little extra blip at the beginning. This was recorded in your studio, and both Greg and Jody very kindly offered their time to come over and not only experience a new piano, but commit themselves to recording on it. So there necessarily starts and stops and retakes and what have you. So again, my apologies for leaving that artifact in there. But it illustrates something about the process, because as I said, these are people who came to an instrument cold that is probably quite a bit different than the ones that they play often or all the time. And so our thanks to them, of course, for making this really happen so we can have the sense of the sound of the piano. Let's pick up the story of Hans Moldenhauer's piano. When he dies, it is bequeathed to the state of Washington, and take us through its somewhat troubled story past that point.
Well, my understanding is that when it arrived at the state capitol, another concert was given in 1990. That concert was given by Kelly Ferris, who was the concertmaster mm-hmm. of the symphony at the time, with pianist Diane Children. And from that time on, we don't have much information, but there is evidence. When the instrument came to my workshop, it had quite a bit of physical abuse to it. There was a section of the music desk that clearly had the imprint of a grocery list written in ballpoint pen, starting with light bulbs. Don't forget that. And plenty of places where veneer was buckled and completely gone because of vases of flowers being set upon the piano. So moldings missing, veneer gone, it is the life of a state institution piano at this point. But then a good thing happens, and that is that the Washington State Capitol Furnishings Preservation Committee.
That's a mouthful.
Which is charged with preventing future loss of historic furnishings and obtaining funding for the restoration, which includes accepting donations. Took this instrument under their wing and said, this instrument is cultural property. And that term is used to denote an object of great importance to the cultural heritage of every people. So it is not just the instrument, which a great instrument, there are plenty of great instruments. And it is instead the combination of Hans Moldenhauer and his legacy and the provenance of this instrument that brings it to this elevated level in which people say, and I say the legislature and the state of Washington said, that we are going to save this instrument and we're going to put it right. So it was put in the hands of a very special committee. Well, it's a department at the state, the Department of Enterprise Services, and specifically the Cultural Resources Manager, who is Mary Grace Jennings. In effect, she's the curator of all of the furnishings, paintings, everything at the Capitol, and she is a highly trained museum professional. So she took it upon herself to figure out who the best people were to fill her in. She's not a pianist or a musician, but she found Del Fandrick, who is a piano designer of great importance and living right there in Olympia. And Del went to see the instrument, decided that he would help out with this, and wrote a series of necessary steps for its restoration and provided Mary Grace with a list of restorers in the state of Washington that were capable of carrying this work out. From then, it went through the state's normal competitive bidding process. If I was building a bridge, I would have done exactly the same thing. And so I followed those procedures, and it turned out that I was the successful bidder. Now, Jim, the interesting thing at this point is that as far as I knew, I've been in Spokane for 4 years. I did not know the Hans Mollenauer legacy or the name even. And in fact, I bid on this instrument without seeing it. So it was a complete surprise to me when it arrived here in Spokane with a plaque on the side of it, which Mary Mollenauer had made up to describe the history of the instrument. And it suddenly dawned on me that this instrument had returned home. And when I spoke with Travis and Charlene Rivers about that, they said, in fact, they were very good friends with Mary and arranged for us to have lunch. So in a strange and wonderful way, the instrument kind of came back home and came to my restoration shop, and I had basically the honor of being the person who put it right and back into beautiful musical and physical condition.
Most impressive. Let's go back to the sound of the piano, and then we can talk a little bit about the process of restoration and just how far down did you take the piano to its bones in order to make this happen. All right, let's get back to Greg Presley and playing one of the, I think, without argument, the most lovely pieces in the entire piano repertory. Sublime piece and wonderfully played by Greg Presley. The Intermezzo number 2 in A major from Opus 118, music of Johannes Brahms. Played in the studio of, in the shop of Ken Eschte as he was finishing up the restoration of the Blüthner Grand Piano. And I've double-checked the time. The performance that is going to be given at the MAC on Sunday is indeed at 3 o'clock. We're all on the same page now on that and looking forward to that performance. We'll tell you a little bit more about the performers as we get toward the end of the program. But, yeah, that was an adventure to come and record. It's the first time we've tried anything like that, and we were using some new equipment that we've gotten in the past 6 months. And so if there's something that sounds a little bit wonky, then okay, this was our first rodeo as far as this new stuff went. But I think the playing certainly is just wonderful, and it does give a great sense of the instrument. Now, you were tasked with the restoration of it. How far down did you have to take the instrument to begin that restoration?
Yeah, well, let's just take a second to define restoration, which is the act of returning an object to some previous condition.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the time in restoring historic instruments, our choice is not to return it to brand new condition. That was our aim for the way it looked. And in terms of the way it sounded and played, we pretty much tried to do everything we could to make it dependable and musically desirable. So in some of my previous historic restorations, that was not the primary goal.
Yeah, but let me interrupt you because you have done a couple of significant instruments in the past.
Yes. Queen Victoria and Prince Albert had an Erard piano, which was purchased for Balmoral Castle in the late 1850s, that eventually found its way to the Smithsonian Institution. And I was hired to do a restoration at the Smithsonian on that instrument. I've also had my hands on the Lincoln White House piano and on a very beautiful art case piano at the Vanderbilt Mansion in Hyde Park. So those are three lifetime achievements that I was really happy to be involved with.
But the idea to get a sense of what you're talking about in terms of restoration, there are restorations where you bring it back to as close as you can original condition, which may mean that it's not serviceable for heavy-duty use, that if you restore what was a very delicate old piano, it will still be a delicate old piano.
That's true because once an instrument is in the hands of a museum like this, their task is to preserve as much of the original object as possible. Secondary to that can be some restoration to allow it to be played. But the restoration always has to go back to rule number one, which is that you cannot harm or destroy anything about the instrument that's original. Now, sometimes the rules are bent just a little bit because just like we want clocks to tell time, we want instruments to sound.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little like having a picture of a good steak dinner. There's just something about that photograph that doesn't really make it. And it's the same for pianos. We would like to hear their original intended sound, and the same for other musical instruments. So in this case, we had a very specific task, which was to bring the instrument into good, solid playing order. And many of the major components of the instrument had already been replaced in previous restorations. We did not have the original hammers. We did not have the original soundboard. And the rest plank, which holds the tuning pins, had also been replaced. So in many regards, this instrument was already not original. And that presented some problems because in restoration, we're often able to read the original instrument like an encyclopedia. This was how it was made. We can see the tool marks. We can see the original dimensions. And so restoring an instrument becomes a little easier like that. But when all of the information has been erased, then there's a great deal of reverse engineering in order to establish what exactly was the height of the strings is necessary to figure out, well, the case parts have to go like this, the pin block has to fit in like this, the strings have to fit on top of that, and that must be the height of the strings. But if it's an original instrument, you can just take that measurement and say that's what it's supposed to be. But if it was restored, then you can't trust those figures. So, and there were a lot of interesting things, problems that were caused by the fact that this instrument had such an unusual pedal. And there's evidence that the decision to install this experimental pedaling system was after part of the instrument was made. There is a place where a normal shift mechanism would have been attached, and you could see that that was cut and then filled in with wood. So a lot of the dimensions, the actual geometry of the action, which normally would be built on the height of the strings and working downward, in this case, it was made by how far would the pedal move the mechanism, and the action has to be close to the bottom, so that everything really did not add up, and we had a bit of a gap, mm-hmm. about 10 millimeters, that was unaccounted for motion in the hammer. So this, eventually we were able to figure this out and work it backwards, but it was one of the big challenges, and Delfandrick and the Bluthner Company were all involved in helping me try to figure out what to do about this action.
That's really helpful to have the company still in existence,
yes,
and still producing pianos, because otherwise it becomes a real treasure hunt with not always the best outcome when all is said and done. So you reconstructed the action to essentially the original specification of the action. In terms of strings, and of course string players are just mad about the kind of strings, so they have to have certain kinds of strings, and they prefer certain makers over another. In terms of piano strings, is there a historic difference in what was original equipment for this piano and what you put in now, or anything
essentially
intriguing
no.
about that?
When okay. it comes to the actual strings, that metallurgy was already in place for the kind of music wire that we have now. So we would have been a little more worried about that had we gone back to, say, 1870 or 1880. But by the late 1890s, we certainly were confident of the string type. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things we did do was the string gauges. Where the sizes of the strings change throughout the lengths of the strings along the keyboard, that was looked at very carefully. We did a modern measurement of each and every string speaking length and then put them through sophisticated analysis that we can do with computers. So we did not follow exactly the string gauge marks that were on the piano as original. We altered that in order to change and even out the string tension.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which is, of course, an important thing, because there is such immense tension
that's
there on the instrument. Best to have it to have some sort of balance in that. Let's get back to another musical sample here. Going back to Jody Graves, and this time some music of Francis Poulenc. Lovely piece there by Francis Poulenc, a nocturne number 8. And Jody recorded that, of course, in the shop of Ken Eshte on the Blüthner grand piano that's going to go to the MAC very shortly. When do you actually make the move?
It's done on Friday morning.
Okay. And once there, we'll have a chance to breathe the air of the MAC and kind of get used to it and be ready for the program at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. The guest artists for that are mainly, well, they're all on the faculty of Whitman College in Walla Walla. Dr. Jackie Wood, the pianist, Amy Dodds, the violinist, and Dr. Sally Singer, cellist. And it's a wonderful program that they're doing. It ranges from Brahms to Piazzolla, to Joaquin Turina and Chopin. I mean, everybody's on there. And also Anatoly Liadov, one of the lesser-known composers of the 19th century. And it sounds like just a terrific program. And best of all, it's free at the MAC in the Eric A. Johnston Auditorium. It, I'm sure, was an immense pleasure for you. And you have to realize that we have to realize that a piano is, of course, first, foremost, and primarily a musical instrument, but also there is a wonderful beauty to the shape, the particular style of case that's on the piano. And this one, you can see a picture of it on our Facebook page. And it's a wonderful, wonderful instrument. See the picture there in Ken's shop with the lid removed. So you see the works in there. And it's lovely, lovely wood. How much restoration did the case require? You're talking about the shopping list
yes,
and all.
Yes, it took quite a bit, actually. And the wood itself is, we believe, an African rosewood. It's quite unusual. It has a very interesting grain pattern, but not the usual dark red of rosewood. It also spans 19th century furniture styles. It has really the legs of a Victorian piano. But the black moldings that are in contrast are reminiscent of the Empire style. So it is really quite an exceptionally beautiful instrument.
It really, really is. And so it's both a treat for the eye and the ear.
Indeed.
When you take yourself to the MAC on Sunday afternoon. Ken Eshte, thank you so much for being with us today and giving us a little rundown on this wonderful instrument that will make its way to Olympia and be part of the heritage of the state of Washington for a long time to come.
It's been my pleasure.
Very good. Let's go out with, again, Greg Presley and some music from our session at Ken's shop. This is some music of Alexander Scriabin to take us out. Thank you. A pair of preludes by Alexander Scriabin, played by Greg Presley. And again, the authentic recording studio sound of a little extra start at the beginning. But my deep thanks to both Greg Presley and Jody Graves for their work in making this program possible. Great playing and just the willingness to record things one, two, even three times. And also to Ken Eshte for his work and, of course, coming in to talk with us here on The Piano Bench on Spokane Public Radio.